This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Broadband Over Powerline World. We're about to speak to Representative Phil King, who represents the 61st District in the Texas House and is also the chairman of the Regulated Industries Committee in the Texas House of Representatives. Welcome to Broadband Over Powerline World.
Thank you.
You're the first elected official I've talked to on this program about Broadband Over Powerline. Why don't you tell us just a little bit about what the Regulated Industries Committee is and what your responsibilities and opportunities are as chairman of that committee?
Okay. Regulated Industries has primary oversight in Texas for all telecommunications issues and, let me see, all electric power issues, pipelines, science and technology, and residential home construction.
Okay. And that means that you're already in charge of formulating regulation for the power industry and the power distribution industry.
Yeah, we do have oversight for that. And when you say formulating regulation, we've been in more of a deregulation mode.
All right, forming deregulations then. Mm-hmm. Yes. And what's been the general tendency in that area on the deregulatory process?
Well, Texas really took the lead beginning back in 1995 in deregulating electric power, and we structurally separated by statute most of the state into retail and generation and transmission distribution.
Right, and how's that been working out generally?
Well, it's been interesting. We went to retail price deregulation in 2001, and on paper, the average utility bill has gone down about 13%. This is for residential and small business consumers. In reality, because natural gas is our primary fuel source for power generation, our natural gas prices during that same time have tripled. So it's ended up gobbling up that, so the ratepayers aren't necessarily seeing that. The industrials have hit home runs. Where they've been able to go back and you know, contract directly with generation facilities, and they've really been the big winners.
Okay, so based on the way things were and on the deregulation and then what happened, what's the concentration of the distribution facilities in Texas now? In other words, are there a lot of providers or are there a few providers? Or
yeah, since we went to since 1999 when we really deregulated the wholesale side, we've had a number of new facilities come in from out of state. We've now got 30,000 megawatts excess capacity in our grid right now, and that's a result of competition coming in.
Okay. And in terms of the distribution grid, is there a large number of small systems or a small number of large systems?
Well, we're a little bit unique. We have something called ERCOT, the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, and that oversees the Texas power grid, which takes in almost the entire state.
Right.
And we're separate. We're not under FERC. And
right.
We're not under the Federal
Regulatory Commission, right.
And that gives us the freedom to manage that in a way that's unique to Texas, and that's why we were able to deregulate that. The areas in our state that are outside of FERC or that are outside of ERCOT are still under FERC regulation, and they have not gone through the deregulation process, and probably can't because there's no RTO or ISO out there to help schedule the power. So we really can't dictate that because it's a federal multi-state issue.
Right. Well, here in California, there are three very large private investor-owned utilities, PG&E, SDGE, and Southern California Edison, as well as a very large publicly owned one, the Department of Water and Power in Los Angeles. Is there a comparable arrangement in Texas so that there are...
Now we have quite a few more providers. We have a lot of small electric power co-ops that may service one or two counties.
Tell people what a co-op is.
A cooperative, it's a member-owned power generation company that's owned by its customers. They have areas that are defined to competition for them, and they're not directly regulated by the state. They were really designed to bring electricity to the rural areas, but some of them are now in urban and suburban areas just because of the population growth. We also have, I'm wanting to say, forget the number, but we've got a substantial number of cities that have their own municipal utility function. The city I live in, Weatherford, has its own municipal power. And then we have IOUs, of course. But what we did with our, we used to have a, I guess, kind of like California, had a smaller number of large utilities.
Right.
And by structurally separating that, we required those to break up into three different businesses. Into the retail and the and then generation and then transmission and distribution. The only thing we left regulated was transmission and distribution. And so with our power grid in Texas, anyone has the right to put electricity into that grid or sell electricity out of that grid.
Okay.
Now, there's some qualifiers in there, but it's very much a deregulated, market-driven environment. The transmission and distribution of it, much like a highway system, is still a regulated entity, and it's open to the public.
Okay, so it's essentially some kind of common carrier, really, that people can put power into, and then
absolutely. I mean, I could set up a generation facility, maybe a wind power unit or whatever, at my house,
right?
And whatever I don't produce or whatever I don't use, I could sell onto the grid.
Is a lot of that happening?
No, it's not at the small level, but we do have a lot of competitors. As I said, a lot of new generation independent groups came in. After in 99, and we have about 30,000 megawatts excess capacity in Texas just because of that.
Okay. Now, with as you've said, the regulations still having authority in the distribution area, how is that impacting the implementation of broadband over power lines?
Interesting question. With BPL, which, as you know, is just kind of an emerging technology,
right.
I'm not really sure where it's going to go.
Right.
One of the problems is, as I understand it, it's a frequency issue, that you can only have really one broadband provider on that line at a time. It's just not a very big pipe like fiber or some other, you know, high-capacity data transmission medium.
Right, about which the discussions are mostly legal as to who's entitled to put
that's
product
exactly
into it.
Because our power line system, our transmission and distribution system, is supposed to be open to anyone who wants to put any power on it.
Right.
Well, so at the same time, if someone wants to come in and say, well, I want to contract in this particular area to do BPL, well, I'm not sure that we're not really sure how that will work. So one of the things we want to do in this next legislative cycle is we want to, and we're doing this with regard to telecommunications in general, we're trying to look at our entire statutory package and try to make it technology neutral. Not that we don't want to promote any particular type of technology such as BPL or WiMAX or whatever that might be, but we don't want to stand in the way of it either. So we want to make sure that we're technology neutral to the extent that we can so that the consumers and innovation and things like that are driving deployment and investment and not the statute, and we're believing that the market would be more efficient in doing that. The other
aspect of it.
Yeah, the other reason for doing that is that we, for example, right now, the last time we redid our telecom statute, we didn't even have cable modem. It was a technology that didn't exist.
Right.
So right now we have some things regulated, but cable modem, which is probably the biggest broadband provider in Texas, is totally outside of all the regulations that some of the other traditional telecom companies are under.
Right.
And so the other reason for being technology neutral is so that we can have a platform that will allow for new emerging technologies that 5 or 10 years from now, you know, didn't even exist today, and that may be dominant or may not. So we want to get out of the way and not be driving innovation and deployment. We want to be we want to be technologically neutral, and we also don't want to have a technologically specific statute that will, because we don't know what's about to come out there. We don't know what technologies are on the horizon.
This is very interesting, because I had a conversation yesterday with Susan Kennedy, who's a member of the Public Utilities Commission in California, and she's pushing for almost exactly the same philosophical transformation that you are, to be technology neutral in order to cope with new technologies that are as they emerge and to make it fairer and more efficient. It's very interesting that you've both come to essentially the same conclusion.
Well, the perfect example is, at least in Texas, is we have the you know, you have your old telecom companies, the SBCs and the Verizon and
SBC is based in San Antonio, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It is. And of course, they're broadband providers. and they are under regulation. But subsequent to the time that we last did any substantial telecommunications, you know, rewrite,
which was about when?
Well, 95.
All right.
Subsequent to the time we last did that, then this cable modem came up. You know, all of a sudden, cable became two-way process, and it's emerged. And so you've got one broadband provider that's having to operate under a lot of telecommunications regulation. And at the same time, you've got, including line sharing and other things,
right?
And facility sharing,
unbundling
exactly of the UNIP,
right?
And on the other hand, you've got broadband, or you've got cable over here that isn't having to provide any access to anyone that it doesn't want to, and is totally deregulated.
Well, in fact, what's happening is electrons and light waves and radio frequency is going through various pipes. And they don't; those electrons don't know whether they're regulated or not.
And the interesting thing about it too, if you step back and you say, you know, just from a economic policy standpoint, if you say, okay, what drives the industry the best, and what drives innovation, deployment, all these things the best? If you look at the areas where you're getting the areas of telecommunications where you're getting the most price reductions, the most bundling of services, the newest innovations, the greatest deployment, all these things that you want to see in a free market, it's in the areas that we don't regulate in Texas, which is wireless and broadband for the most part.
Right.
However, if you look at the areas that we regulate heavily, which is, you know, basically your old legacy, you know, equipment, your old plain old telephone systems,
right,
you've basically got the same package today and basically for the same price that you had 10, 15 years ago.
Right. Well, then the obvious lesson that you draw from that?
Well, is that the market is a better regulator than a regulator.
Now, does this all mean, and the same thing is, we had the same discussion here regarding California yesterday, does all of this argue for the possibility of essentially starting with a clean piece of paper or an empty screen and designing a system that is a regulatory regime that's as you said, technology neutral and somehow wouldn't care whether the internet connectivity comes through coaxial cable, fiber, WiMAX, Wi-Fi, or broadband over power line?
You know, I think that's the preference. What makes it more confusing is the fact that, different than electricity in Texas, telecom is dually regulated. In other words, you have the FCC that has jurisdiction, and what areas that they have not preempted, or the feds have not preempted, then the states still have authority with in that. Areas that have not been preempted fully by the Fed. Problem is, it's very ambiguous now as to what what's been preempted and what hasn't, and the triennial review report, of course, and the changes with the D.C. court, and then all the new rules that are coming out now. The states, at least with regard to some areas, are losing their authority to regulate, which is probably good because a lot of that is hard to argue that it's not interstate commerce.
Right.
So there's some ambiguity there. I think at least my personal desire, I can't speak for the whole legislature,
right,
but my hope is that we're moving toward letting go and trusting and moving more to a market-driven economy or market-driven industry with telecom and with electric power. We've got a lot of freedom to do with electric power. Telecom, we're only going to be able to do it to the extent that the Fed allows us to.
Okay, now I'm starting to hear increasingly that the Federal Communications Act of 1996, which was, of course, put in around the same time Texas did its last update, is going to be renegotiated or re-legislated next year. Is that a reasonable?
Yeah, I'm hearing that as well, and I'm also being told that Texas has the opportunity to kind of set the tone for that.
Right. Although I'm sure California will have something to say about it as well.
I would think so.
Well, in fact, then, let's talk about that a little bit more, because it seems to me that in addition to all of the complications involving different technological platforms, are the complications involving state versus federal regulation. And what do you see as the emerging ideal arrangement that if you were on the federal level and you were doing the drafting there, what general principles would you like to see implemented in a rewrite of the federal law, which would correspond to and then go put back on your state hat and say what you think you could be doing at the state level that would mesh nicely with what the feds might be doing if you had authority to help implement that?
All right. If you just asked that question to me in a courtroom, I'd stand up and say I object because it's too long to understand. But I think
what's the policy you'd like to see at the federal and state level?
See, that's the problem with all this stuff. It's very hard to even ask the question
right.
because it's very complex, and that's the point I was trying to make. But
right.
I think stepping back, I think that what the states and the Fed have to do is I think we have to focus on this aspect of intermodal versus intramodal competition.
Okay, explain what that means.
All right. Intermodal competition would be, for example, competition between the local exchange. Your local SBC here in Texas, who has required to unbundle its network elements and allow sharing of facilities, and so that there's competition within that circuit switch network.
Right. That circuit switch network, which is essentially, seems to me, is becoming obsolete faster by the minute.
It is, the old copper stuff, but at the same time, it's going to be there for a long time because it's all over. You know, you're not going to go in and redeploy in old neighborhoods and
right.
things like that. Now, the intramodal competition is the idea of well, you know, competition isn't really what's going on between SBC and a CLEC.
Right.
Competition is really... because that's looking at it through the company's eyes down.
Right.
Real competition is looking at it through the consumer's eyes up, which says what's available at my house or Mark's house. Well,
right.
my house, and I live in almost a rural area, I've got, in addition to several different carriers that I can subscribe to for my local service and for my long-distance service, I have a cable modem available. I have IP telephony available over that cable modem. I have wireless email if I want to go to BlackBerry or something like that.
Right.
I have several different wireless telephone providers that I can use.
Some of which are also SBC if it's singular is there.
That's exactly right.
Right.
And so from that perspective, I have a number of communication choices that are available. So although, you know, you can argue about whether there's true competition, facilities-based competition has arisen or not with the switched circuit at the switched network level.
Right.
You can. It's hard to keep a straight face and say that there's not intramodal competition.
Right. And are you saying that the existing regulatory structures don't really take that as much into account as they should?
I believe that completely. And then you've also got, and I think the Fed's taken the correct direction in this, and that the FCC is taking the position that if there's any, you know, one of the things we've had the old incumbents telling us here for a long time is, look, we're willing to put billions of dollars in fiber and new fiber in the ground.
Right.
But we don't want to do that if we're going to have to share it. Well, now the FCC's made it pretty clear that they're not going to have to share it.
Right.
Now that's going to lead to a lot of redeployment. You know, you're going to have fiber to the node and this type of thing and that's going to be some refitting of those older existing neighborhoods, and obviously new neighborhoods are going to be fitted in that manner.
Right.
And you know, that's going to shift, and then all of a sudden you've got, you know, the old incumbents of the world. Anyone who's got access to a big pipe, whether it's, you know, fiber or whatever, you know, they're talking, they're pursuing the triple play now. They're, you know, where they're pursuing voice data. Video.
Right. Now, relative to this, I don't know how familiar you are with it. I covered House Bill 30 in Pennsylvania story about 2 weeks ago. You know much about that?
No, not a bit.
The city of Philadelphia has appointed something called the Wireless Philadelphia Broadband Committee, and they're investigating a municipally owned wireless system, mostly WiMAX, mostly Wi-Fi. And Verizon's the incumbent provider there, and they saw to it that the legislature in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, passed a law saying that municipalities can't charge anybody for wireless networks unless they have first refusal. And the bill was hovering on the governor's desk to see whether it would be signed. People in Philadelphia are very unhappy. They managed to get Verizon to sign a side agreement saying that they would waive their right of first refusal in the case of Philadelphia, but they didn't waive it for the rest of the state. So now, if any municipality other than Philadelphia in Pennsylvania wants to deploy its own wireless network, it's got to give Verizon a chance to build it first. Now, what is that? Is there anything comparable in that way in Texas? And what does that imply about the things you've just been talking about?
Well, a couple of things. One, for example, our municipalities, our cities, are prohibited from providing telephony. they can do electric power.
And they can do broadband over power line?
And they can do, well, that's an interesting question, because if they do broadband over power line, then a third party might offer, and certainly would offer,
right.
IP telephone off over that broadband, and the city may not even really know they're doing it or have contracted to allow them to do it.
So the rule is that the cities can't offer voice service.
So the question is, if they offer BPL, which opens the door to voice service from a third party,
right.
Can they do that? And that's one of the things I don't know the answer to, because the statute doesn't address it.
Because that seems like the logical, one of the big logical things that's going to happen here, because the voice over IP companies are aggressively trying to market themselves to anybody who's got broadband, and if BPL allows broadband to be sent out to a lot more people over existing power lines and paid and the fees paid to the municipalities, and you say you've got a rule saying municipalities can't offer voice service, then it becomes an interesting technical, regulatory, financial play.
Yeah, it is interesting, and then you take that a little bit further, and you say, well, now wait a minute, do we even want? And this is a little bit of a debate we're having now, is because we have several of our municipalities talking about. You know, like one told me the other day that they're thinking of setting up Wi-Fi in their small town square, just so that it's available in the restaurants and kind of as a tourist deal, kind of a neat deal.
Right.
And of course, my first thought was when they said that, I said, well, you shouldn't be able to do that, because all you're doing is taking a business opportunity away from somebody in the private sector that would have took that and used it to make money.
Right.
And because I kind
of... On the other hand, if the municipality does it and makes, let's say the municipality makes money, they could lower the taxes of all the businesses in town, couldn't they?
Well, you could make an argument with that. Well, they should open a restaurant and open all these other things too. I mean, you know, personally, I'm of the school that says if it's in the yellow pages, the government shouldn't be doing it.
Right.
Otherwise, they're competing with the private sector. And one, that's wrong, because you can't because the government will always be able to outcompete the private sector, because they can use other people's money without their choice. But the other reason is that monies are generally used much, much more efficiently in the private sector than in the public sector, so you get more out of that dollar. And so I'm kind of the school that says, no, I don't think municipalities or counties or the state or anybody ought to be, you know, running Wi-Fi or WiMAX or broadband loops or whatever.
Well, what about the municipalities that now distribute electricity, though?
Well, like, you know,
does that philosophical point you just make also apply to that electricity distribution apart from BPL or apart from voice over IP?
In a perfect world, it does. Now, the other side of that is, though, you know, we've got all these legacy systems. It's kind of like in a perfect world, we'd have perfect competition on local service.
But right.
In reality, we have a history of going from, you know, AT&T to the Baby Bells to all these things as we try to kind of work through that. And,
right.
And it's the same thing with your municipal power utilities. We're not going to come in and break those up, because they're standing and they've been there and they've got investment.
Right, but the point is, and I think that's where the rubber, the electrons hit the circuit here, hit the packet switching system, is that if it's a legacy system that government entities can provide electricity, and the BPL technology now means that any network that can provide electricity can provide broadband, and any network that can provide broadband can provide not only voice over IP but video over IP, and therefore is competing with the cable companies, the telephone companies, privately owned mostly. What does that mean for the future of telecommunications?
Well, I mean, those are all the interesting questions, because, you know, you take the cable company and they'll say, well, look, we were built with venture capital.
Right.
Not guaranteed, rate of return.
Right.
Guaranteed return on. And I mean, that's the whole debate. At what point do you say, gee, that investment's been paid back, and that what was a public utility, you know, doesn't really need to have ownership of that legacy equipment anymore. And I mean, that's kind of been part of the basic argument. But what makes things a little more interesting in Texas is with regard to the electric power utilities, is our municipals, our municipally owned power companies, and our cooperatives.
Right.
They are not into competition. They have they can opt into competition. We haven't had any do it yet.
What does that mean when they do that?
That means that they would be subject to, they would be able to compete, but they don't have, right now they've got a protected service area.
Right.
Like the old IOUs used to have. And no one else can come in and sell electricity in those areas. If they decide they want to to compete and sell electricity outside of their area, then that means also the people can come into their area and sell.
Right.
But it also means since they're not in competition and they weren't forced into it, they never had to structurally separate. And so they are still, in some cases, the generator, the transmission and distribution.
Would they have to structurally separate in order to go into competition?
No, they would not.
Which would give them an unfair competitive advantage or disadvantage, depending on how you view whether integration or separation
depending
is a better approach.
Do that. Yeah, exactly.
What I'm trying to see, though, as I visualize it, you know, a person who doesn't know about economic theory and looks down at the system here and sees information being distributed by legacy copper, legacy coax, or power lines, or wireless, and technically there's really no distinction at the end user level as to how how that data is being transferred. And so the question then is, what combination of philosophy and legacy systems and political expediency and requirements are going to go into shaping what form the new approaches take?
And that was a mouthful.
It was.
and I mean, that's the fun stuff about this. It's such an interesting study in consumer economics, you know. And the fun thing is that the technology is changing so quick, and that there's all this new stuff coming online, and consumers want it and need it. And we've got some great opportunities. It seems the best way to help encourage that economic development, in my opinion, is for the government to take the smallest role possible.
Okay.
We're always going to have a consumer protection role.
Right.
We're always going to have the confusing thing of, what do you do with this old legacy equipment that was built under guaranteed rate of return as opposed to with venture capital and risk and all that. And what's the public interest in that and not, and at the same time, like you said, from the user's perspective, what we're hearing is the guy that lives just on the outskirts of the city and says, when are you going to get DSL out here?
Right. Let me ask you about some specific stuff. I interviewed Vice President of Sales and Marketing at Broadband Horizons a few days ago. They've deployed broadband over power line into cities that I'm starting to learn how to pronounce, Blanco, Weimar, and Burnett.
Blanco,
Burnett, and Weimar. Did I get it right that time?
Pretty close. Burnett. It's pronounced Burnett.
Burnett.
Yeah, and the Burnett. Can't you learn it?
Yeah. All right. Burnett, Blanco, and Weimar.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah.
And what kind of reception has it been getting? And what does that imply for the other small towns in Texas?
Well, it's kind of interesting because they've actually come up and marketed it with my municipal utility.
Are those towns, by the way, in your district?
No, they're a couple hundred miles away.
Oh, okay.
I've actually got an open invitation to go down there and tour it and look at what they're doing. I've been meaning to do that.
Well, maybe this will encourage you to do it.
But it's, those are small rural counties.
Right.
They're counties that will probably not, in most of those areas, get broadband unless it's through some new technology such as WiMAX or BPL.
Right.
And that's the big attractive thing for Texas. You know, we're a large state, and only 17% of the population lives in rural areas. So it's hard to justify running fiber out to those homes when you've got one every 2 miles or something like that.
Right.
But something like BPL really obviously cuts down that infrastructure cost.
Right. That was the point that the spokesperson there made, that they almost all have electricity out there.
And they're also doing it in areas where the transmission distribution system isn't open. I mean, if I understand it correctly, they're doing it where there's electric co-ops or municipals, so they don't have to get into this question of, well, do you have to open up the transmission system to any provider, or can one just take the contract? If they're dealing with a co-op or with a municipal, they can just do a contract just for them.
Right, and
because they're not in an area where there's been structural separation.
They've essentially the municipalities or the co-ops outsource it to Broadband Horizons, and they
right.
build it, and then the city runs it.
Exactly. And so, again, I don't really have an opinion on whether broadband over power line should or should not become a viable alternative. You know, my perspective is to make sure that legislatively there's nothing that prevents that technology from developing if in the marketplace it becomes a viable technology.
Okay.
And so I'm delighted to see them running with it and trying it. I want to make sure that in our next legislative session, which starts in January, I want to make sure that we remove any impediments, and theoretically I think there are some in our deregulated electric market area.
Such as what?
But and that's the fact that our transmission and distribution grid is required to be open to anyone that wants on it. It doesn't say anything statutorily about putting broadband on there.
Because what the question that I think that emerges here is if Broadband Horizons working with a co-op or a municipality enable broadband over power line enables part of the grid, then does that make them a common carrier on the model of cable or a regulated telco or? Do they have to unbundle their services?
I think they're totally unregulated if they are on a municipal power system or a electric cooperative power system.
Okay.
But when they come on to in the area that is within competition, where the transmission and distribution has remained a state regulated entity.
Right.
Then one, I think all of a sudden they subject themselves to regulation, and two, they may not even be able to contract to come on to the grid at that point, because the way that grid was set up was like a public highway that anybody could have access to it, and yet only one provider can. So if ABC Electric Power Company operating this particular set of transmission lines wants to let Company A come on and do broadband, well, they've got to let everybody do it theoretically.
But you can't put the inductive couplers on every.
And then you get into. So basically, what we want to do is, and it's a perfect example of the. We have a new technology that may or may not be viable, but it's being looked at. So we have a new technology that statutorily was never even envisioned.
Right.
And so, and now we're looking and we're thinking, we think our statute may stand in the way of that a little bit, and we don't necessarily want to promote it. But we want to get out of the way of it, so if it turns out to be a good technology, we're not stopping it.
Well, that's the sort of meta issue. That's the big issue here, it seems to me, that in 1996, the legislators, mostly lawyers, not engineers or researchers, do the best they can based on the principles they're trying to implement to do something. And then a new disruptive technology comes up that hasn't even been addressed. And I'm wondering whether there's any way to reform the political process to allow a smoother transition to these new technologies.
Well, if you do that, then what you do is you get into the idea of having a special commission to deal with that.
Right.
And that tends to look toward more regulation. I think my hope is that we have what we call a sunset process every 10 years, and that's why our Public Utilities Regulatory Act is under scrutiny right now, because it's our 10th year and we're going through sunset.
Right.
And that tends to be the time we take a hard look at it again and rewrite everything.
But is 10 years fast enough?
Well,
or short enough?
in this field, I don't know if every year is soon enough, but that's why we want to look. What I hope will happen is that 10 years from now, when we're doing sunset again, that we will see our Public Utilities Commission and any other regulatory entity with regard to telecommunications. I'm hoping that we'll see their role in the market having decreased.
Right.
And my hope is that if we set up a technology neutral. legislative framework,
right.
that the market will then, through normal market forces, begin to self-regulate.
So, in fact, there is a solution there. By regulating less and less and letting the market determine more and more, it's possible then that the market can react, within minutes, depending on...
Sure, it's just like any other industry.
Right.
It's just telecom's got this odd legacy of having started off as a regulated entity, and now we're kind of slowly trying to shift it away from that, and it'll have its ups and downs, and has for the last 20 years that they've tried to do that since the, original antitrust stuff. But I think if my thought is 10 years from now that with all the new technologies, they'll be bypassing the old legacy equipment and all the other things that will happen, and the tremendous consumer demand for these services, I think we'll see more and more of a market-based industry, and with that, and one that the Fed and the state governments have less and less involvement in.
Well, I think if Texas and California can get together and agree on what kind of model would be optimal, they're halfway to selling it to the federal government, wouldn't you say?
Well, you know, it's interesting because everybody's always looking for the model. You know, a couple of years ago you heard the Florida plan,
right.
You know, and that didn't turn out. And now here, boy, we sure hope Texas in this next year will come up with a model that we can all really, you know, look that the country can look to. And,
right.
And, you know, I don't know if you can do that or not, but...
Well, the problem is, obviously, there's so many historical and political idiosyncrasies applying to each state that it's hard to do that. But if the principles are strong enough, they ought to be able to work for California, work for Texas, and work for the rest of the United States, work for the whole world, in fact, if they're strong enough principles.
One thing that makes it more difficult for the states to be more definitive in their pursuit of this is that there is such ambiguity at the federal level. And,
is that deliberate ambiguity or incompetent ambiguity, would you say?
No, I don't know. It's one of those things where, you know, how can you possibly do everything perfect?
Right.
You know, all I know is that there is a lot of ambiguity with you know, you have a triennial report that we're all looking for and we're hoping it's going to clarify and settle a lot of issues, and it comes out, and whether you liked it or not, it did address a lot of stuff, and then part of it gets overturned, but part of it doesn't, and now they're going through rulemaking for the part that did, and so we're kind of going through all that, and incrementally things are coming out, and you know, we're trying to talk, you know, they're trying to define VoIP, for example, and what is that, and what parts are an information service, and well, where does VoIP start and end, and you have the Vonage model, but that may not be the whole deal, and you know, and so there's a lot of change, and that makes it difficult for the state. You know, I think if this was a perfect world and the FCC had a perfect set of rules that were not under contest and the technology was fairly static, then the states could sit down and design design something that complements that.
Right, but the essence of the situation is that the technologists are busy at work making the broadband broader and the chips faster, and that continues to disrupt the process.
Disrupt it or bless it.
Right.
It may be the only thing that saves it.
Right. Okay. So I guess what's emerging here is there is no definitive answer, that the problem is so complex that there's really no way to say, even at the most general level, this is the way we ought to proceed, and this is the way that we can maximize the value for everyone. Or is that right?
That's exactly right. And I think the fun thing is there's a lot of cool technology out there.
Right.
And the public is going to have more and more access to more and more neat things, and you know, we just need the states and the Fed we're gonna have to kind of struggle through that, and you know, hopefully we'll look back 10 years from now, and most of the time we'll have done the right thing, and the industry will have progressed, and consumers are happy, and companies will have made a lot of money, and
all
have got reelected,
and everyone will be reelected. Right? I noticed there seems to be a town called Cool in your district.
Yeah,
so that's cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks very much, and I'm going to put this out over a server in Arizona, so everywhere can listen to it.
We can bore the masses,
and we can bore the masses at faster and faster speeds.
Right.
So, thanks very much, and I hope we can talk again in a few months and see how things are going.
Yeah, we'll really be hopping about February, so give me a call.
I will. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
Welcome. Bye.